Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain. Support for WPR comes from Milwaukee Film, presenting the 16th Annual Milwaukee Film Festival, featuring local, national, and international films, April 11th through the 25th. Tickets are at mkefilm.org.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll cover the top state and national news stories of the week with two guests from different political perspectives, and we'll welcome your views and the stories you want to talk about, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us Chris Lotto, former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Joy.
And Christine Bremer-Moogley is also with us, attorney with Bremer and Trollope law offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. Hello, Christine.
Hi, Joy. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk first about the John Doe emails. Governor Walker was asked about them and whether he knew about the secret email system some of his Milwaukee County employees were using when he was running for governor. He was asked about this on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. Let's take a listen.
Question: if county workers were doing nothing wrong, why should they be using a private email account?
Well, but that's exactly to my point. You had a Democratic district attorney spend almost 3 years looking at every single one of those communications, interviewing people, talking to people, and closed the case last March.
Did you know it was a private email account?
No, again, it's one of those where I point out the district attorney has reviewed every single one of these issues.
But, sir, you're not answering my question.
No, because I'm not going to get into 27,000 different pieces of information. The bottom line is a Democrat who led the district attorney's office looked at all this, decided not to charge anything other than the individuals you mentioned who were people who had worked for the county in the past but don't work for me today. I think that's pretty straightforward.
So, Chris Lotto, should Governor Walker answer that question?
The thing is, once you answer it, it's never going to be enough. And it's an election year. This is, he has to be careful in how he answers, quite frankly. It should be no surprise to anyone that he is. And no matter what he says, he's going to get raked over the coals. He'll never give an answer that satisfies certain elements, certainly on the Democratic side. And I think he realizes to date that his best course of action is to keep his head down and focus on the things that he needs to do, not only to get elected, but to do the job as governor. Now, that he may change that, that stance over time. It's entirely possible. I know there are certain elements now that listened to the news a few minutes ago that there are others, CRG, Citizens for Responsible Government. Some of those folks are a little upset by this, too. So the pressure may come to bear on him where he decides that he does have to do a Chris Christie style news conference and sit there for 4 hours and answer every single, question of minutia over, 27,000 pages of documents. I mean, first of all, the idea that he personally oversaw every one of these decisions is just silly. I mean, that's not the case. You have to delegate. People have to, manage these issues. And he was not personally doing that on each and every case. The Democrats are always going to demand more from him.
Yeah,
so they desperately want to see that smoking gun. And frankly, what's come out to date, there is no smoking gun. I mean, there was a long investigation. There were people convicted. There were people or are people now that are paying the legal price for this. And Scott Walker is not among them. Is it bad PR? Yeah. Are there some emails in there that are embarrassing for him? Yeah, I'm sure there are. But that's about as far as it goes.
Well, Christine, what do you think? Does the governor have to hold a news conference on this?
Well, I think that the governor really should let the people who elected him know what he was up to during the campaign. And I think, it's kind of sad when we have people say that, if you answer questions about whether, law was violated with regard to your conduct in government, that those questions will never be answered sufficiently, so we just won't answer any. I just think it's hypocrisy for him to say that he's a man who is an Eagle Scout and believes above all else that honesty is the most important thing, and yet won't even answer a softball question from a guy like Chris Wallace on Fox, who simply says, should people have private emails? When we know, based on these 28,000 emails that, you know, I haven't certainly read all of them, but I've read enough to know that he was part of it. He was part of an inner circle of people that communicated him on his own private email, and he knew that they were communicating him from his county office during work days. So, you know, I run an office, you know, and I have people in my office, and if they're doing something that my office doesn't allow, I know it. You know, he had people 25 feet from his office with a private email system in a credenza. And he claims he didn't know and he won't answer these questions. Of course he won't answer the questions because he knows it's wrong. And so, you know, the people have a right to know. This is not something that we should have to spend a lot of time on. We have a lot of problems in our state and everybody's kind of sick of this. But, you know, for him not to answer the questions just makes it worse and worse and worse.
Simple question,
did he know? Why doesn't he answer?
Meanwhile, Republicans are criticizing Democratic gubernatorial candidate Mary Burke for employing an advisor who was convicted of campaigning on state time in the past. That was after Mary Burke said Governor Walker was setting a low bar for ethics with the John Doe investigation. So, Christine, is this hypocrisy on Mary Burke's part?
No, it's a false equivalency for the Republican Governors Association, which is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to criticize Mary Burke, to come forward with a comment about Tanya Bjork, who was involved in a very small issue in the caucus scandals, you know, over 10 years ago. I mean, she served her community. She pled guilty to it. It had to do with a small campaign contribution to an attorney general and changing a calendar for Tanya, who at that time was certainly not the chief of staff of the governor's office or the chief campaign worker for the governor or working as a deputy chief of staff in his office. You can't bring this together. So it's a classic case of switching the topic. This is rank hypocrisy for them to talk about Mary Burke when they have this whole huge scandal with all these people so close to the governor being convicted. And then they point out Tanya Bjork, who has, you know, since that time served the governor, served the president very successfully, and now serves Mary Burke also very successfully. So it's just hypocrisy. Tanya should not be brought into this at all.
Chris Lotto.
Well, with all due respect to Christine, I think this is our first time on the air together, so I'm enjoying it so far, but the idea that I can't imagine you're sitting there with a straight face saying that that the Walker team is engaging in hypocrisy. I mean, you have in Tanya Bjork someone who is convicted for campaigning on state time, trying to cover up, soliciting campaign dollars on state time, was convicted, and now you have Mary Burke lecturing Scott Walker on ethics. That's a fairly audacious bit of hypocrisy there. I mean, Mary Burke says Scott Walker has set the bar low, so if that's true, Mary Burke has found a way to limbo right under that.
Well, I would agree that I haven't been with you either, Chris, but I think you must not be talking with a straight face. There is no comparison to a very small violation with Tanya Bjork over 10 years ago to this huge violation of his whole staff, including his chief of staff, his deputy chief of staff, people going to jail. There is absolutely no comparison. You know, Tanya was charged with a misdemeanor. It was over. So this is not the same.
Well, I think it was more than one misdemeanor. And if Mary Burke wants to take the ethical high ground, then she needs to clean house first.
Well, let's.
Mary Burke is on the ethical high ground, and Scott Walker isn't because he won't answer the questions that everyone is putting to him, even Fox News.
Let's talk a little bit about where this whole John Doe, the emails, where is this headed? Do you think this is going to have any major impact on the election, Christine?
Well, I think it will, because remember, this isn't over. There is still another John Doe investigation going on. And I think that, you know, to answer and say, well, I wasn't convicted, so this is over and it's old news, is just disrespectful to the people of Wisconsin who are now finally for the first time seeing these emails. People want to know what this is about. I mean, the state is made up of all of us, you know, and there are, you know, maybe there are 50% of the people in Wisconsin that didn't vote for Scott Walker, but he is still our governor. and he still has to answer to all of the people. And I think it's disrespectful for him to say, I'm not going to talk about it, when what is being alleged here and what we can see with our plain eyes is a violation of law. He was using private emails to communicate with his campaign staff and his county workers during county time. So, you know, I think that this is not over, and I think that we're going to see more. You know, there's been an effort now to intimidate the prosecutor by having Club for Growth having a huge lawyer from Washington, D.C. with huge credentials come in and sue the prosecutor and the judge and the people who are prosecuting under John Chisholm for the second John Doe investigation to try to intimidate them into stopping it. It's unbelievable what's going on with regard to the efforts by the Republican Party to protect this man, Scott Walker. But I don't think the people of Wisconsin will put up with it, and we need some answers. Mm-hmm.
Chris?
Well, if Scott Walker broke the law, as Christine keeps on asserting here, why hasn't he been charged? Six people were charged and paid the price legally for it. Scott Walker is not. This investigation went on for how long? 3 years? Ultimately, everything that's coming out here, too, is for the most part political inside baseball. It's about people that most of us in Wisconsin don't know anything about. Most of us, frankly, probably don't care about. It's the kind of stuff that, you know, gets the quote-unquote pundits like me and Christine buzzing. But, you know, a lot of this stuff is insiders gossiping about other insiders. And it may be titillating for those of us who work or follow politics closely. But, frankly, it doesn't affect the vast majority of Wisconsinites. Vast majority of Wisconsinites are concerned about jobs. They're concerned about, making sure their health insurance is in place, making sure their school's doing a good job teaching their kids algebra. I go back to the point that if they had something on Scott Walker after 3 years, they apparently couldn't prove it because he hasn't been charged with anything. So this idea that we're going to stand on the rooftops and shout that that laws were broken, well, the people who broke those laws, according to a Democrat DA, are paying the price for it legally. They were convicted, and that's the bottom line.
You know, I think that it's really important that, you know, I think what you said is really true, Chris, that people are most involved with their jobs and their lives. But one of the things that we need to know about our public officials is that they're operating on an ethical level. And Scott Walker has said that governors who surround themselves and must be careful to surround themselves with people who are of the highest ethical caliber and the smartest people. And when we read these emails and we see those nasty, you know, jokes that they're sending around and the low level of the conversation, you know, and the political nature of decisions being made about, you know, whether to agree to a settlement for a person who died starving to death in a mental health institution, and it's being delayed because of political purposes by the governor's chief of staff. You know, these are things that are important to the people of Wisconsin with regard to the character.
Absolutely.
Of the people who are running the government. And that's why these emails are important.
And there are 27,000 pages of email documents that people can publicly review and make their decisions accordingly. And frankly, yeah, right. Some of that stuff is tasteless. It's indefensible and certainly embarrassing. There is no question about that. However, we're already slipping here in the conversation, Christine, in just the last few minutes. You know, a minute ago, you're saying, well, legal, you know, Scott Walker broke the law. And now we're kind of, well, it's ethical stuff. I mean, that's the problem here. That's the bottom line thing where you're saying that Scott Walker is, you know, is a lawbreaker and he isn't because they haven't charged him with anything. They haven't found anything after 3 years. That's the point.
Well, I think that the issue is really what are the people of Wisconsin going to say? I personally, as a lawyer looking at these, think that there was evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to convict him. Whether this comes back, you know, the district attorney changes his mind and brings something forward, we'll see. But and I hope he does. But, you know, with regard to the other issue, the judgment of the people of Wisconsin with regard to their governor, the people he surrounds himself with, the conduct he's engaged in, the things that he said publicly about not knowing anything when now we know he knew exactly what was going on, really make you question whether he's telling us the truth on many, many things. So I think this is something that comes back to haunt the governor, and it will over and over again.
We have to take a break. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Christine Bremer-Moogley and Chris Lotto here on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Bill Martins joins me for a few moments because this is our winter membership drive. Listeners provide the single largest piece of our budget, and that's why your gift is so important. To encourage your gift today, your pledge of any amount will automatically enter you into a drawing for an iPad Air. So make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we heard from 54 listeners. So nice job, everybody, and I think those chocolates found a good home.
Yep,
I think we went through all those. So thank you very much for those pledges. Our goal this hour is 60 pledges. So help us meet this goal by making a contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio thanks to your support.
The Ideas Network is here to provide you with diverse viewpoints from different guests. Listeners also bring a unique perspective to the conversation, too, because there's so much good food for thought on these programs. You probably do start some of your conversations with, "Did you hear the Week in Review, what so-and-so said on the Week in Review?" It's time to take action now to participate in making this show happen with your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just a few minutes of your time. Tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. You can give in one lump sum, or better yet, become a monthly sustainer. No matter how you choose to give or how much you give, use the next few minutes to support the station you depend on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Everyone who pledges today will be entered into that drawing for the iPad Air. You don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and telephone number to WPR iPad Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Did I say that fast enough? Enter by sending a postcard or make a pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Can be an auctioneer when you retire.
You
might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars, and it's true, we do get funding from the federal and state governments, but listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
Your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know how important listener support is to WPR, make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On Wisconsin Public Radio, you get programs that inform and inspire you, programs that entertain and engage you anytime you want.
And what makes it possible? You do, people who contribute to make it happen.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, membership matters. Become a member with your pledge of $5 a month or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you to the 10 of you who have already pledged during this hour, looking for 50 more pledges to reach our goal. Thanks to Rachel from Appleton, who says, "I have to give because I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio all day long, and it was time to show some support for all you do." Thank you, Rachel. Evelyn from Appleton says, "WPR programs give me ideas, which I often use at work or in my life." Good for you, Evelyn. And Jess from Bristol says, "I love the Joy Cardine Show." Thank you very much, Jess. How about you? WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Bill. We'll talk to you at the end of the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Week in Review. Talking today with Chris Lotto, former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. If you would like to join in, you can call 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Because of pledge, we need to move on to some other issues in the news this week. We did have the Wisconsin Supreme Court this week hearing arguments in the voter ID challenge. And Christine, you're an attorney, is it likely that the Wisconsin Supreme Court is going to overturn Wisconsin's voter ID law?
Well, I certainly hope so. It sounded like, from listening to the oral arguments and reading the reports of them, that it seems like a majority of the justices have some problem with it, with the voter ID law and the requirement for a photo ID. I mean, Justice Rogensack was pretty clear that it bothered her because it appeared that those who wanted to get a state-issued ID, even though the state ID is free, had to pay, you know, $20 to get a birth certificate. And you're not, you know, the law does not, the Constitution does not allow someone to be charged to vote. The same thing Justice Prosser indicated, it was a great inconvenience for him just to get his own birth certificate. And then, you know, even Justice Gableman chimed in when the chief was talking about the fact that her own father, who didn't have a birth certificate but was a U.S. citizen, probably would not be allowed to vote under the new law in Wisconsin. So it seems like there's going to be some serious concerns about the obligation of citizens now to come forward with some kind of an ID. You know, Judge Ness in the League of Women Voters case said that the law created a new category of citizens, and that's not allowed under the Constitution. This category would be those persons who don't have an ID. And Judge Flanagan in Dane County said that, you know, you can't require this because the right to vote is guaranteed by the Constitution, and the poor and the housebound and those who, you know, live in remote areas, as many people do in Wisconsin, including myself, you know, they would have, this would be difficult for them to come forward with. So I think there's a very good chance that this law will be struck, and at least in part, because it puts an impermissible burden on people's right to vote.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
Yeah, I was thinking about this last night. I've been talking and arguing about the issue of voter ID for over a decade now, ever since I was first with the state GOP, and it made me feel very old. the bottom line is this, that requiring prospective voters to show some sort of official ID at the polls is really a common sense effort to help erase any possibility of fraud at the polls. I mean, the election system in Wisconsin is among the most open and liberal in the nation. There are measures that can be taken, and most states do have a voter ID. The vast majority of states have some sort of voter ID law in effect. Something can be taken here in Wisconsin to help protect the integrity of your vote and mine. You know, our legally cast ballots are not canceled out by fraudulent votes. That's what we want to make sure of. It's as simple as that. And I think that, you know, those who question the voter ID law, to a certain extent, there's an unwillingness to have any sort of voter ID in the state. So it's kind of a smokescreen to pick it apart. I think that when you talk about voter ID, it is a measure that prevents the disenfranchisement of voters in the state. It empowers us as voters who are legal voters exercising a basic right as American citizens. Now, the state Supreme Court hearings, Justice Rogensack was singled out as somebody who was questioning this, and Christine was mentioning others. And, you know, that's good. I mean, they're doing their job as justices. They're playing devil's advocate and asking these questions. So, you know, I think you have to keep in mind that in and of itself is not a worrisome thing. They're doing what they're supposed to do. And I think keep in mind, too, that the vast, vast majority of Wisconsinites already have some sort of ID, and you can't really function in our society without one. So if ultimately the current law is found to be problematic, which, of course, there is a chance that's going to happen, it is incumbent on the state legislature to go back to the drawing board and try and figure out a way that they can get this done, because I think this is an issue that's you know, too important to ignore.
Let me bring a caller into the conversation. Cliff in Appleton, go ahead.
Yes. As an African-American Wisconsin citizen who appreciates all the struggles of the civil rights movement, I resent the voter ID effort, primarily because there's never been shown to be any significant problem with voter fraud in Wisconsin. And to say that it protects, you know, voters being able to vote, I think is a backwards argument. It's like a slick lie, just like you can't equate the fact Walker was not charged with Walker did not commit a crime. Some of these Republicans are the slickest liars on planet Earth.
And we want to not go into the name calling, but he resents these voter ID laws, Chris, because there's really been no problem of voter fraud in this state.
All due respect to the caller, yeah, there was no question there, but the fact is, and I said this in my earlier comments, is that we are closing a loophole, essentially, with the voter ID law. It is not intended to disenfranchise any voter in Wisconsin. That is the smokescreen that the other side is putting up. They would like to see things even more open than they are now. It's simply a common sense measure to protect the integrity of the vote. It's hard to catch somebody, committing fraud. If I'm going to come in to a polling place and lie about my identity, and you haven't seen anything from me that proves that I am who I say I am, how are you supposed to catch that person? You know, and can we say, well, you know, we're certain that the percentage of fraud in Wisconsin is 10% or 30% or 50%? No, because the very system that we're trying to protect here makes it almost impossible to identify folks when they are committing fraud. So the idea that we're asking for something that is you know, again, expected in the vast majority of states, and is a way to get around this idea that our vote, your vote, the gentleman's vote, who's on the call could be disenfranchised. That's just common sense. And I think the majority of Wisconsinites agree with that stance. I think we've seen poll after poll where most people believe we should have some sort of voter ID program in place.
Christine?
Well, I guess I disagree with you. Surprise, Chris.
Not really,
I
but
think that, I think that Cliff was right when he taught you. You know, I appreciate the fact that he's emotional about this and feels strongly. Mm-hmm. But you know what he's talking about is this law is a solution in search of a problem. If what we're looking at is to prevent voter impersonation, which is the only kind of fraud this ID would prevent, then we have to look at the history in Wisconsin. Voter impersonation would be very, if it was occurring, would be very easily to discern, because someone would come in and say, well, you already voted, and they'd say, well, that's not me. And we'd know that, but that has not happened. Not once has someone been charged in the state of Wisconsin for impersonating someone else in voting. So we have this law that's trying to prevent something that has never happened. Just think about in our small communities in Wisconsin, you go in, people there know most people. They know their neighbors. If you come in and say, I'm Jesse Smith, and you're not, they're going to know that. And when Jesse does come in to vote, they're going to figure that out, and somebody's going to be prosecuted. It's never happened.
Well, I think...
Let me finish. You know, one of the other things that I think is really important that you said, that, you know, this is not going to disenfranchise people, and no one says it is, that it's absolutely a falsehood. In the arguments before the Supreme Court, the representative from the Attorney General's office actually conceded that it would be okay to deprive some citizens of the right to vote, including, for instance, Chief Justice Abrahamson's father, because we are protecting the vote for their other 90%. That is not our Constitution. We do not say, well, we'll just hold 10% back who can't get an ID because we want to protect the other 90% from a problem that doesn't exist. So when you say we're just trying to protect the vote, that's just not true, because we haven't had this issue in Wisconsin. And so and what we're absolutely doing here is disenfranchising people that are poor, that are remote, that are disabled, that are powerless, who might not vote the way those who are putting this legislation forward want them to vote.
Did you want to say something, Chris?
I mean, you know, we're going to kind of go around in a circle here, because I just frankly disagree. And I think that you're saying that this is some sort of, cruel burden on our most vulnerable in society. And that's just not true. The idea that you can go through life without having some sort of ID. I mean, voting is one of those basic American rights that should be protected. I've said this before on the show. I think Wisconsin's laws for voting are too open, and I think that there needs to be more protections in place. And you talk about small communities. I live in a very small community in Jefferson County, so I know what you're talking about, and I agree with you. The folks who work at my polls may well know me, because we're only a few hundred people in our community. But you know, that's not necessarily where you're going to see the problem. Where you might see the problem on election day is where you're in Milwaukee, where nobody knows each other and people are showing up at the polls. And this idea that somebody shows up at the end of the day to vote and they say, well, you know, you already voted hours ago. Well, how are you supposed to catch the person who did that in the first place if you don't have any idea and can't track that?
Let's talk about another issue in the news this week. Governor Walker pledged this week that the typical property tax bill in 2018 will be lower than the one that we will receive in December. So he's pledging much lower property taxes. What do you think of that pledge, Christine?
Well, who isn't in favor of lower property taxes? I don't think there's any doubt that people would love to have lower property taxes. I think that the way he's going about funding this is wrong. I think Mary Burke's idea about taking some of the surplus that we've come in because of higher revenues to give property tax relief is a good idea. And I think that that's the way we should do this rather than any other way. I think that we need to fund education. We need to put money back into those things. And so I think it's a matter of priorities. It's just, it just seems to me that in an election year, when the governor starts talking about tax rebates and lowering property taxes, it seems to me like, you know, he's pandering to the electorate. And so I think that what we really need is someone in place who's a grown-up and who can look at the problems of our state and say, you know, it may not be something we all want to pay for right now, but we really need to fund education so that our children can be successful and we can really help people get forward rather than pandering. I mean, I would love to see my tax bill go down. Who wouldn't? But really what we need is responsible government. And I think that Mary Burke's idea about using that surplus in a different way is a much better idea.
Chris?
Governor Walker has made it abundantly clear during his years as both Milwaukee County Executive and Governor that he is very concerned about where taxation is at in Wisconsin and is consistently striving for ways for us to basically pay less and to keep more of our money and to make sure that our state government is running more efficiently. And he is doing that, has done that, will continue to do that. So when I hear that he, you know, made the statement that he wants to lower property taxes in 2018 compared to where they are now, I believe him because he has a record that is very consistent on that front. And he knows that when people and small businesses can keep more of their money, that's good for families' pocketbooks. That's good for small businesses who can then turn around and invest that money back in their businesses, can hire more people and can start to grow. So he recognizes that that is what works in Wisconsin, and that's what's going to turn things around and continue to improve the economic climate in the state. So I believe him and support him in that front, and you know, hopefully he will have a legislature behind him that has the same vision.
Coming up on the Week in Review, we will talk about the bill that Arizona's governor vetoed that would allow religious reasons for refusing service to gays. We will talk about that, and we'll talk about some other national issues as our Week in Review continues. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with Chris Lotto and Christine Bremer-Moogley. And we are in our winter membership drive, so a reminder that we could use your contribution to help pay for this service that you listen to, this service that you value, this service that you participate in. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your pledge of any amount helps pay for the programming, and during this hour, your pledge will also automatically enter you into a drawing for an iPad Air. So you decide how much to contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe $5 a month is a good place to start. Maybe you can do $10 a month or $20 a month. It's completely up to you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We are looking for 46 pledges in the next 20 minutes or so. So won't you be one of them at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks to Dorothy from Glendale, who made a pledge and says, I listen to WPR even when I'm not in my car. Well, good for you. I'm glad you do that, Dorothy. We also have Carl from Milwaukee who says, I wake up with WPR and I listen whenever I am in my car. Well, we appreciate all of your pledges to Wisconsin Public Radio. Each and every one of them is appreciated and needed. Won't you join the many who are choosing to support Wisconsin Public Radio by going online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Do it because you enjoy hearing from great guests like Chris Lotto and Christine Bremer-Moogley and many others during this Week in Review program when we try to offer you civil, intelligent debate on the issues of the day. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is the Ideas Network. Mm-hmm. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. The hottest thing sweeping the country these days is sporting a Milwaukee Brewers uniform, but it's not one of the players. It is Hank, the adorable stray pup that wandered onto the team's spring training facility in Arizona and has become the team's unofficial mascot. It didn't take long for him to enter his first sausage race this week. And today's question is, what costume did Hank wear for the first sausage race? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call in your answer. 1-800-642-1234, or you can email it to talk@wpr.org. We will give you only 5 minutes or so, since we have our pledge drive going on, to guess, and we will reveal the answer and the winner at the end of this Week in Review program. And we have a new nifty prize that we're offering our Week in Review quiz winners. It's a bottle opener. It's a Wisconsin Public Radio bottle opener, so try your luck. All right, let's talk about Arizona Governor Jan Brewer vetoing a bill that would have added legal protections for people who refuse service to gay people as a part of their religious beliefs. It's been called a religious freedom bill that would allow businesses to refuse service to gays based on religious reasons. Now, again, the Arizona's governor did veto this, but this bill is similar to others that are being mulled in other states. Christine, what do you think of this?
I'd like to hear Chris talk first.
I think Christine, I was going to say, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised by where I come down, but go right ahead.
Okay, go first. Okay. Well, when I looked at the list of the states that had similar measures coming up, I was so relieved to see Wisconsin was not one of them. But, you know, I think that Governor Brewer did the exact right thing for her state and for the people of her state. And you know, I think she should have done it maybe a little bit quicker. I don't know why she had to pause over it for so long, but at least it seemed like a long time to make a decision to veto. It's not in the interest of the state of Arizona economically, obviously, and it certainly is not good public policy. But, you know, the sad thing about it is now it's gone by, you know, but it put this on the front burner. But it seems like in Arizona now they're bringing up another bill that gives the right to churches to refuse to perform marriage ceremonies for single-sex couples and give the right to do warrantless searches in abortion clinics. So they just keep coming up with this divisive social legislation that the governor said she doesn't want to see in her last term. She's trying to do something about the economy and jobs and make things good for the people of Arizona. But for some reason, these divisive bills keep coming up. And I think I'd like to hear from you, Chris, as to what you think about that, because I think it's amazing that instead of trying to bring people together in a time of economic disruption and when we're suffering so much in our country economically, that the social legislation comes up to divide us, and it's just pathetic, and people are really sick of it.
Christine, you're right.
Yay,
we win. So, look, preface my comments here by saying, you know, this is not, you know, those with religious beliefs and faith, you know, this is not an attack at all. But that said, this is a dumb bill. And I don't know how, it doesn't even make sense on the face of it. I don't know, how do you prove or infer that someone's gay? I guess your gaydar has to be pretty darn sharp to do that. I don't know how you do it. So on its face, it doesn't make any sense. And it, you know, in a number of states where it is being proposed, as Joy alluded to earlier, it is dying out in a number of states. And I know a number of others are stepping up and drafting it, but it's absurd and it's an idiotic bill. And yeah, I think in a number of states, including Arizona, they should have more important things to worry about than this.
Well, let me just say that I believe it wasn't in Arizona, but in New Mexico, where, what was it, a photographer or a baker was asked to make a cake or take pictures at a same-sex wedding. Mm-hmm. And apparently, based on religious beliefs, they did not want to take part in this same-sex marriage or provide that service. And I think proponents of these bills are saying, you know, they should be able to say no. I don't want to do that. Christine, should they be able to say no and not have to do that?
Well, it's just like any business having the right to turn down a customer. If you're not doing it on impermissible ground, you can make decisions on business basis not to do things. And so, you know, if someone can't meet the requirements, if someone's, you know, wanting a certain kind of a cake, you know, you say no. So I think that it's, you know, no one says that you have to provide service to everyone, but you cannot discriminate on the basis of a constitutionally protected class. And everyone, that's what our Constitution is based upon. That's what our country is based upon. We all agree that we should not discriminate. It's the basic tenet of our lives here in this country in the Civil Rights Act. So, you know, I think that, you know, as long as you're not discriminating on the basis of an impermissible, you know, group, you know, you can make decisions as a business what to do and what not to do. I think that it gets the, it's like, it's the same thing we were talking about with voter ID. It's like a solution in search of a problem. I mean, I you know, I think this is really ridiculous to try to bring this kind of thing forward and let good people find solutions to these things.
I was with
people
you right
until well,
I was with you right until the point you said voter ID. But you know, I mean, you're right, and I do think that, you know, in some of these bills, sometimes there's a certain sort of use the P word, pandering to certain audiences, you know, in election years and things like that. And again, this bill is, I don't know how you work this bill, but I think this is an example of a certain set of politicians pandering to a certain audience.
Let me move to another topic. Senate Democrats have delayed debating a proposal that would increase the federal minimum wage to $10.10 per hour. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said Republican obstruction on nominations was slowing the work on the minimum wage. So is the minimum wage going to be hiked to $10.10 an hour, Chris Lotto?
I know we're running out of time, so I'll be quick. I that feels like a bargaining chip. That seems, you know, to raise it 40% in 2 years seems ridiculously high. I think eventually it is going to go up. I think that is asking for way too much. We saw the recent study from the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, that this would cost 500,000 jobs. It's not like this money, to use the old cliche, this money does not grow on trees. If you're paying more money out, you're going to have an impact. And, you know, everybody likes the idea, just like they like to hear the idea of their property taxes going down. Everybody would like to make a higher wage, but there is an impact and you have to keep that in mind. And that said, I'd be surprised if it gets, you know, through at this level in that time frame. Mm-hmm.
Christine?
Well, I think that if they do raise it, it will bring, according to the CBO, 28, or a White House study, I guess, from Economic Advisors, 28 million workers will get a raise. 900,000 people will be raised out of poverty. You know, and if that occurs, how good is that for our country? I mean, conservative ideology, Chris, you have to agree with me, says that we want to increase personal freedoms of people. We want to get them off the government dole. We want to get them away from reliance on government for food stamps and other benefits. And if you raise people up and give them the opportunity to make a living wage, then you give them that chance. And I think that what we're doing now with this ridiculously low minimum wage is we are actually subsidizing employers who are failing to be fair with their workers by saying, okay, well, you don't have to pay them enough. We'll give them food stamps. So we're all subsidizing employers who fail to pay their workers fairly. And I think if conservatives were honest about it, and many conservative people are writing, conservative, you know, commentators are writing about this, if we were honest about it, we'd say, of course we need to raise the wages so we can lift people out of poverty. That's the whole goal.
And Christine gets last word on that because we have to.
What?
Now it's time to congratulate our winner of the Week in Review quiz, Arnold from Oshkosh. We asked, what costume did Hank the dog wear in a Brewers spring training sausage race this week? And of course, the answer, a hot dog costume. I think we can all agree that Hank is the best thing to happen to the Brewers in a long time, even if you're not a baseball fan, and I'm not that huge of a baseball fan. This Hank is so sweet. He was named after Brewers legend Hank Aaron. Hank the dog did not wind up winning the race, but he impressed some people in the Brewers organization. Here's what third base coach Ed Cedar had to say about Hank's performance.
First outing in a sausage race with all the huge sausages around him, his little hot dog costume. I look for good things from Hank in the future.
I do too. The Brewers have tried to find Hank's owner, assuming that he has one, but so far no one's come forward. And they say if no one comes forward, the Brewers will adopt him for good and take him back to Milwaukee. So looking forward to that. So have you seen Hank, Chris, or Christine?
I'm embarrassed to say I haven't, but it sounds like an awesome story. What kind of dog is he?
Little white terrier of some sort. Very cute.
Very cute. Very cute.
Well, I'd just like to say, Joy, during this fun drive, that he may be the best thing that happened to the Brewers, but you're the best thing for WPR Ideas. And so I think people should come, you know, open their pocketbooks and give money to WPR so we can keep supporting Joy's great program.
Thank you, Christine. I like you better than Chris. I'm just
teasing.
Wait,
what? Guess who's going to be invited back on the show next week?
I'm teasing. Thank you both very much for being here. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Christine Bremer-Moogley and Chris Lotto. Thanks to both of them for joining us for the Week in Review. Now joining me for just the next few minutes is Bill Martens, because this is our winter pledge drive, and we need to hear from you in the next 5 minutes. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Listeners provide the single largest piece of our budget, and that's why your gift is so important.
And to encourage your gift today, your pledge of any amount automatically enters you in a drawing for an iPad Air. How cool is that? So make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking to get 34 pledges in the next 5 or 10 minutes, we'll let you call through the news. Your pledge will help keep this program strong, and your pledge will let us know that you appreciate this Friday Week in Review, where we cover the top issues in the news during a given week, the top political issues, and then we find two really great guest to commentate on those political issues. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That was a fun weekend review, wasn't it? I mean, you got Chris and Christine coming from two totally different perspectives. They disagreed on a lot of stuff, but they did it without being disagreeable. Mm-hmm. And we found a few areas of agreement as well, which is always kind of nice. So, you know, that's what we kind of look for in these weekend review programs, and we discuss the latest hot news of the week, state and national. And if that's an hour of programming that you truly enjoy, then why don't you make that pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio and help ensure that programs like The Week in Review are here to stay. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, I just made the connection that we had Chris and Christine, mm-hmm. and now someone who pledged during the show, Christina from Wisconsin Rapids, who says, I've been listening to public radio since my oldest son was born. I wanted him to hear quality voices and intelligent conversation from baby on. That's great. Forcing your infant to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. Please make a pledge to help support a program that you value, a service that you value, that you learn something from every day. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Again, a pledge of any amount this hour will automatically enter you into that drawing for an iPad Air, and those of you who are sustaining members are automatically entered in that drawing, so you're good. But if you haven't made that pledge of support to Wisconsin Public Radio yet, and we are looking for 34 more of you in the next couple of minutes to do such a thing, go to WDPR.org or 888-202-2552, and perhaps that iPad will be yours.
We had a listener write in to say, I love people coming together in community to support WPR. Well, I love that this listener made that comment.
Absolutely. We agree. Pledge is a great time for you and us to share our enthusiasm for the programs and the service we all love. So join the community in celebrating WPR and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might spend a few dollars a month on a TV streaming or movie subscription, a few dollars a month. What are the think about Wisconsin Public Radio in that way. You tune in every day for information and entertainment.
If you've never given before, start with a gift of $5 a month. That's comparable to your Netflix, maybe even a better deal. It's easy to set up at WDPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You support the things that make your life more meaningful, and I hope Wisconsin Public Radio is one of those things. Here you get information about events in our region and the world. You get talk about the issues that matter to you. You get music and humor and storytelling and more.
Little of everything there. You'll want a lot of news and information in the coming year, of course, and this being an election year, more important than Your average year, I would say. And your support now will make that possible. So your pledge in any amount will make a huge difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are still looking for 33 pledges through the news to help reach our goal. Join David from De Pere, who pledged and says, "Inspiration comes from you and all you do." Wow, that's pretty deep. Thanks, David. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You can pledge any amount that you want. It will all help, and any pledge is also entered into that iPad Air drawing.
Yep, so go ahead and make that pledge now, and good luck to you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much, Bill Martins. Bill produces and directs this program, as does Christy Taylor and Robin Cherry. Thank you for all you do, too. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.